Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host Bill McHenry is still on vacation up in Canada, but our trusty producer Lee Cantor is here in his place. Thanks for filling in today, Lee. How you doing?
I am doing good, and Bill is now a mythological creature because we don't see him very often. But when he comes, he makes it's a big, momentous occasion.
Yeah, but we will hear from him next week. That's not a problem. Well, you know, Lee, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business, you know, the planning that precedes a launch, the victories, the setbacks, I guess the agony and the defeat that occur after a launch, so that innovators and entrepreneurs can learn from both the successes and the failures of launching an idea and the journey that follows. This morning, we're going to be featuring Jay Johnson of 5-Minute Productions. But before we get started, Lee, could you thank today's sponsor?
Our sponsor today is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
Okay. Well, you know, Jay Johnson of 5-Minute Productions got started back in 2001. And if you need a web design, a new brand, advertising, promotional materials, they help.
He can help you find one.
He can help you
find somebody to do that.
That's right. But you know, they help small businesses, startups, entrepreneurs establish effective brands through superior and effective design. So, Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
That's right. And yeah, you do a lot of different stuff. I was looking at your website, you know, earlier today, and at all the different logos and designs that you've done and everything. Mm-hmm. But what was it like 2001 when you first got started?
Well, actually, I was a little luckier than most. I was working for corporate America, and I guess you could call them a client I had at the time that I was working with in my spare time that did nonprofit work, actually met the CEO of UPS, who then loved her cause so much that he gave her millions of dollars, at which point she said, oh, well, we need a new website, we need a new brand, we need all this new stuff, and I have lots of money to pay you with.
Yeah, that's nirvana.
Do you want to, do that for a living? Okay. And that's where I got started. But
were you doing marketing and design in your previous
yes.
job?
Oh, yeah. It was all the same thing. It's just that at that point, I'd work for someone that didn't necessarily do what I do, that was working with the client.
Right.
It was a situation I was going to get out of eventually anyway, just because unless you work for an advertising agency, you're generally answering to someone that knows nothing about what you do.
Right.
So,
and probably doesn't appreciate you either.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, the art people are always expendable.
That's true.
Now, but that's a good lesson for entrepreneurs, though, is to have something on the side and then kind of grow your business from that.
Oh, sure. Oh, I would think that if you're willing to start out small, mm-hmm. that doing it while doing another job and slowly building up from
clients,
my perspective,
right.
A brand identity and your client list and all that fun stuff is a great way to go about it, sure.
Yeah, because, most entrepreneurs, they face the challenge of getting that very first client, and getting people to know, hey, I'm here, I'm in business, and you were able to kind of sidestep that. That's kind of a dream situation of, here's a big check, and can you do the work for me?
Exactly. yeah, because when I had been doing it on my own, it was very much, hey, you're a local business, I just want to get work. Not necessarily concerned if someone knows who you are, knows your business.
Right.
I just want to get a website out there that I can say, yeah, I did that one.
Okay.
You've never heard of it. It's this mm-hmm. tiny little shop in, nowhere, Georgia, or something like that. And then once she landed, it was, okay, now we're done.
Okay. Right. So now you didn't have to, you had that big client first. Now, were you able to then take that and then get additional clients, or did you work
sure.
solely on that one client?
Well, initially, I worked solely with them, just because that was the first client. I wasn't entirely sure what my workload capability was.
Right.
And that's another thing that entrepreneurs probably can get swamped with, is either taking on too little work or taking on too much work.
Right.
But once I realized, okay, I can do what she needs done and handle other work, that's when I started to leverage that.
Did you have the 5-Minute brand then?
Yep.
So since the very beginning you had that?
Yeah, that was actually developed for a project in college as a joke. I can tell you that story if you like.
We had love to hear it, yeah.
When I was in college, we had a six-month-long project that I had an idea for right from the get-go that the professor would love, so I may have procrastinated it some.
For 6 months.
Yeah, so 2 days before it was due, I started working on it. I finished it the day it was due, at which point I needed to come up with a production company. It was a CD, a music booklet, a Jewel booklet. And I needed to come up with a production company, and one of my friends joked that I did it in about 5 minutes. So I slapped my hand on the scanner, shot it over to the computer, photoshopped it in, and then turned in the project. So that's where the name came from, 5 Minute Productions.
Do any of your clients ever question the name of your company?
Sure, in a few different ways. I've had some not clients. I actually had a lady whose name I never got call me 3 or 4 months ago because she had found my website on the internet and said she needed a company logo in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
How much would I charge? Which I said, well, I can give you a logo in 30 minutes,
yes,
but I'm going to charge you more than than what I would normally charge if you gave me a realistic time frame. And I've had some people ask me to do, you know, music production or video production. And it's like, yeah, I can do that for you. I have the equipment. I have the technology.
Right, but that's just, not your
that's not what
sweet
I do.
Spot.
Oh, well. Yeah, and it's going to sound like I put it together.
So like, what's the stuff you really like doing?
Well, what I do and what I enjoy doing is anything that has to do with brand recognition. Ron, you mentioned that I do a wide range of things, mm-hmm. but that's because there are a wide range of things that pertain to your brand, whether it's your website construction, logo development, corporate identity, business cards, letterhead, stuff like that, to magazine ads, billboards, web advertising. That's and I enjoy all of that, so that's what I do.
Do your clients typically engage with you to do a project like a billboard or a logo, or mm-hmm. do they kind of keep you on retainer to help them with their marketing in general?
They do both. A lot of people will get in touch with me to do something specific, whether it's we need a trifold brochure, we need a trade show booth graphic layout, to something more complicated like an e-commerce website or something like that, to, I guess, test me out is the best way to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they discover there's an ongoing need, they will put me on retainer.
So they might just kind of put their toe in the water.
Right.
And,
which I am all for.
Right.
One of the things that I always tell people is that my job is actually pretty difficult. It's one of the harder ones out there. And it's not because what I do is technically difficult. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a rocket scientist. I'm not doing anything that you can't learn on the internet. But what makes it difficult is that everyone thinks they know design. Everyone right. thinks they know what other people like. And my job is really about taking myself out of the equation and figuring out, okay, you're trying to appeal to this market. This is what they think about as a massive unit, not as individuals.
Yeah. Now, when you look at your creative ability and your artistic skill, were you born with that, or did you learn it, or how'd that happen?
I'm not entirely sure. I would say I learned it. I mean, I was drawing stick figures until I was 12, 13, and then just suddenly one day I was, oh, hey, I discovered three dimensions, and oh, this is great. So I would say I learned it, and I learned the appeal to massive amounts of different people just because I think of my upbringing in the Army where we moved around
right.
all over the country, all over the world. But yeah, I would think pretty much, and I would tell people they can learn how to do it. It's just a way of thinking.
But how'd you learn to draw, though? Were you, like, reading comic books and that helped kind of teach you? Or did you just, all of a sudden, you knew how to do it? I mean, I would think that there's some skill and learning that has to be involved.
No.
No, there isn't?
Well, there wasn't for me.
All of a sudden, you can...
I'm not kidding. I was drawing stick figures. I could recreate them for you, if you'd like, where it'd be a mountainscape, and I'd draw little war scenes with stick figures with little stick guns.
Right, and then all of a sudden, they look like real people.
And then... I don't think it started with real people, but it was like... And then I drew a mug that was sitting on the, you know, desk, right. And it was 3D, and it was shaded, and it was like, whoa, look at all this neat stuff.
So you just intuitively figured that out.
Right. I did read comic books as a little kid. No, I didn't read anything that taught you how to do it, but, you know, I watched cartoons, I read comic books, I looked at a lot of art, you know, having lived in Paris and Washington, D.C., and going to museums because my parents made me, you know, I absorbed that kind of material, but I didn't actually take any instruction.
Interesting. Well, you know, you mentioned that everybody thinks they know how to do design.
Mm-hmm.
In looking at your website, I saw you did some work for the tour of Georgia, and that one of your challenges was not using Lance Armstrong.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's, that can be a big no-no for people is they'll think, oh, there's this super-duper, everybody knows him, celebrity, in this case, Lance Armstrong. We got to use him. We got to promote him.
Right.
And then it just distracts and detracts from...
The race.
The race itself. Yeah. And that's a common mistake that people make.
Right.
That's one of those things where it makes sense once I tell you that that's the way it is. But people don't naturally think about it that way.
Right.
So.
Okay. Well, if a client comes to you and they say, you know, they ask you the question, what kind of website do I need? Where do you go from there?
The best way to say it is I'll interview them to figure out what they're willing to do, whether or not they are selling a large number of products. A lot of people going into getting a website think that because they're selling a product, they need an actual e-commerce solution. They need a web store. And it turns out that they have one product, and that's all they're really going to have.
Right.
So that's sort of like putting your one product in a, you know, 15,000 square foot corner store. It's like, you can do that, but you might be overkilling it just a little bit. So that's really what I try to do. The big thing is getting people to realize that, okay, I'm not trying to upsell you. I'm trying to give you what you need.
Right.
Because
you don't know what you need.
Right.
Now, can you walk us through, like somebody comes to you, And let's go through the whole process of somebody coming to you with their product.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do research on it, or you interview. What happens in this interview?
Well, I'll talk to them about their product, whatever it is, what they want to achieve with it, which can very much steer what kind of branding you do. If you're looking to only license it, you need branding.
Right.
A lot of people think they don't, but you do. But you're trying to appeal to a very different type of person than if you're selling it on the market.
Right.
Because you don't really care about the people on the market if you're trying to license it. You only care about the corporate bigwig that's going to, you know,
license it.
Buy the idea. So I'll figure that out. And then depending upon what answers they give to that, I'll then go in and research who their target audience is. So if it's something like licensing, or they're only a B2B type project,
right?
I'll know that right off the bat. But if they're trying to sell widgets, I'll need to figure out, okay, this is who you're trying to appeal to. This is who buys widgets. This is how
to
sell it.
That's a different strategy then.
Right. Yep.
That's interesting. Well, you know, one of the things that's really popular nowadays are blogs, but some of our listeners might not even know what a blog is and how it's used. Could you help us on that?
the blog term means basically an online journal. That's where that originated. It's a way for someone to essentially keep a diary online. What it has grown into over the years is just frequently changed content. If you think about someone writing a blog or a journal, let's say you're a business. A lot of people starting a business think, yeah, I don't really do a lot of journaling. I don't really need to do that. Keeping a quote unquote blog continually updates their content, whether they're talking about what they did from a business perspective that week, that month, that quarter, something they read on the internet somewhere that they wanted to talk about. All that does is A, changes the content on their website, which is good for Google and Yahoo and all the robots out there. And it creates a personal connection with their potential customers.
So you see this as part of the evolution of having a website? Like initially,
yes,
a website was kind of a brochure on the internet,
mm-hmm,
and now it's becoming more of an interactive experience for the end user and the owner of the website.
Exactly. And it's been necessitated because of the evolving search engine technology.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that, and I get this from a lot of people, you could pay for rankings in Google, and you can't really do that anymore. You can pay to get the sponsored
right
spot, but that doesn't do anything really
where your website is.
Right, where you actually rank. When you stop doing that, you'll end up wherever you basically were. So how Google and Yahoo and Excite and all those engines have changed has also sort of made that a necessity for people.
So what are some of the ways that a person could boost their website? So you're saying blogging, that's one thing,
mm-hmm,
like that fresh content,
right,
that's relevant and to the point of whatever their subject matter is.
Right.
And are there any other things or non-technical?
For search engine optimization? Yeah.
Let's talk about that real quick. Search engine optimization is a two-pronged thing. There's the technical, the nerdy part, that I like to call it, that's all programming-based, where
right,
it's putting words in what you might have heard of as meta tags, meta descriptions,
right,
which are 100% only for search engines. Google sees them, people don't. Using the web don't.
Right.
But
they're important, though.
Oh, they're very important. And it's sort of a one-time...
You do it at the beginning.
You do it at the beginning,
right,
and then you'll revisit it. A lot of people think you do it and you're done.
Right.
But you'll want to revisit it to make sure you're using the right words.
That are current.
Exactly.
How often should you revisit it?
I would say on average every 2-3 months,
mm-hmm,
just to make sure, check the statistics that you have. Anything more frequent than that, you're going to get ridiculous data.
Right.
I always tell people, if you want to go crazy, check your website statistics every day, and you'll go nuts.
I know people that do that.
Yeah, and it's really not good, because you'll get, one day you might have 50 visitors, and the next day you might have 20 visitors or 10 visitors. And if you look at it, you might think, okay, what did I do
yesterday
that got me 50? And you'll
right
go nuts, because you didn't do anything. It's just that.
Yeah, I think with some people, it's almost like an addiction.
Oh, yeah.
That until 2 o'clock in the morning, they're just tweaking their site and tweaking it, trying to, you know, score in, you know, the top one or two, you know, for every search engine.
Right, right. And that's...
Is there a way to tell, like, a benchmark, like you said, 50 or 100 or whatever that number happens to be? How do you know if you're doing good at all?
It's long-term, it's relative,
mm-hmm,
to yourself. A lot of people will get caught up in comparing themselves to ESPN or, you know, some big company.
Right.
And it's, you can't do that. You have to start at the beginning or some start point and say, okay, this is what I'm doing.
Right.
This is what I want to achieve. Okay, now let's...
But, like, say it's 100 visitors a day. Or
mm-hmm,
what's the metric you should be looking at? Is visitors the metric? Or
visitors
hits?
Would be, yeah. Hits are worthless.
Okay, hits are worthless. So visitors is a metric. So you have 100. Mm-hmm. Now, is it possible to get, you know, 1,000, 10,000? Like, is that something that can happen in a short period of time, or is it something that takes years?
As far as getting significant results, I always tell people to wait at least 3 months.
So what's significant? Even 100 to 1,000?
100 to 1,000 is a pretty massive leap.
That's massive.
Yeah. It's just because you're talking about fairly small numbers.
Right.
Once you get into the thousands, going from 10,000 to 20,000 isn't that big a deal.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about startups, I get nothing. I want to get 10,000 hit. Oh, whoa. That's a pretty massive leap because right. You're talking about the discovery process.
And
people have to find you first.
And it happens incrementally like that? There's no magic way to flip a switch and a fire hose of traffic comes to your site?
Well, I'm there is, and then soon after you get that fire hose of traffic, your site will be shut down or blacklisted because the only ways to do that are really not liked by all the search engines.
Right.
So then, you know, you'll get blacklisted.
So you have to do it slowly and incrementally over time.
Yeah, and that's getting back to the initial question, is where the second part of search engine optimization, what you can do as the site owner, comes into play, because blogging is one thing, but another thing that search engines look at are links back to your website.
Back to you, not you out.
Not you out to other people, so like, but other sites back to
it's
you.
It's less valuable for you to link to CNN and, you know.
That'll do nothing
big,
for you.
Cause big, they're popular sites, that's not really helping your cause.
Right, but getting a link on CNN.
Back to you.
Back to you.
That
would be... And that, if you manage to do that, then yeah, you could go from zero hits to, you know, so, tens of thousands of hits instantly just because the amount of traffic CNN gets.
Right.
So that's where things like Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, if you want to appeal to 10-year-olds, and social networking comes into play.
Because that gives you the opportunity to get those links back mm-hmm. to you.
And then participating in forums. If you can do a link exchange with someone, that
what about
can work.
Like if you go on another blog and you go, oh, that's a really interesting post. You know, I talk about something similar on my blog, and then you put your blog in there.
That can work if you have established a relationship.
Right.
When you're talking about forum discussions, blog commenting, that kind of thing, you can just post random comments on people's blogs if they're not paying attention. It could get through. But building a relationship, commenting on someone's blog without a link back a few times,
right?
Them getting to trust you and then saying, hey, oh, I just talked about this, will get you more traffic. It's just you have to establish. You can't just spam people's
so that's
blogs.
Considered spamming by putting your website as part of your name or
well a lot of blogs will have you put your website as part of the logging in process
right.
or the sign up process so it'll be there and that link will be there.
Does that count?
That'll count. And when search engines go out and look, they'll find those. But one of the big reasons to do that, aside from just having the links, is to have people click on it.
Right.
If you don't say anything that's at all interesting, no one's going to care.
Right.
So that's where that comes into play.
Well, once a website is built, mm-hmm. What's kind of the mix between what the client can control as far as content and what he has to go to, you know, the webmaster that built it?
That all gets back to, A, how technically proficient the client is, and B, what they pay to have done as far as the website's built. A lot of the blogging software, since we were talking about that, that's out there, can actually double as a content management system.
Okay.
So if you're capable of learning how to blog, there are ways that you can have the website built so that you can then go change the content on any page, add pictures, add media, video, you know, sound, all that fun stuff yourself. Obviously, there's a price difference in that. And there's sort of a learning curve. But the software itself is very easy to learn how to
do. It's much easier to do that than how it used to be of having a website.
Oh, yeah. I can't actually tell you the last time I built what's called a static website, which is I have to call my programmer to change the About Us content just because it doesn't make sense from a cost standpoint to not pay extra up front to be able to do it all yourself as opposed to calling your web programmer every month or every 2 weeks to change something. Right.
Especially if it's something minor.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, there's been with all the technological advances, a lot of people have been getting into video. Mm-hmm. How important is it to have video on your website?
It's fairly beneficial. Not so much because video is infinitely better, but because there's less of it. When you think of the number of words on the internet, the number of pages that are word-based on the internet, you're talking tens of millions of pages. And that, in the most base standpoint, is what your one web page, any given web page, is competing against. When you then think of videos, there are hundreds of thousands of videos, which is significantly smaller than tens of millions of pages, and that's what you're competing against. So the content, from a technological standpoint, is a much smaller profile, and videos are inherently more fun to watch than
that's true
than reading text. So
yeah. Well, when you look at the options that you've got of having the video embedded in your site versus putting it on something like YouTube and then mm-hmm. having a link to YouTube, how do you make those decisions as to, you know, what's best?
I always tell clients to put it on YouTube and then take their embedded in your website code and put it on your website.
Okay.
Because then you have the video in two places doing double duty. And from a hosting standpoint, you're not paying to have that video play. One of the things people don't necessarily think about is hosting. And you have to pay for a certain amount of storage space, but you also have to pay for a certain amount of transfer space, which I'm sure Lee knows about.
Yes.
So the more people, if you have a video, let's say you're paying $4 a month for the bare bones economy plan at GoDaddy, which I think is $4.95 right. or something like that. You get, I forget what it is, but it's 10 gigs of transfer, which means if more than, I don't know what that comes to, but 15,000 people come and view your video a day, your site will go down because you're not paying to transfer that stuff from your server to their server. So putting a video on YouTube means they're hosting it. They're paying for the streaming. You're just embedding the code that then says, okay, go get the video from YouTube and send it to this guy.
Well, but they're still staying on your website.
But they're still on your website. So.
So then you benefit doubly.
Okay, as far as making the video, I know that it's pretty simple to do technologically, but is it a smart thing for someone to make their own video versus having it done professionally?
Well, that again gets back to what they're trying to achieve. If it's a talking head video, then sure, just using your own webcam is a great idea. People are tuning in to see you talk. Okay. Essentially, so
you don't have to hire a professional videographer for that.
Yeah. I mean, you could be like
that guy in the mall that has the one product. You know, you could. They'll do it.
You will find someone to take your money, no problem. So yeah, that's a situation where you wouldn't want to do it. Now, if you're getting your some promotional piece done for your product, then absolutely you should pay to have that done. One of the things I always have I told you so moments on with clients, even though I don't actually say that, is product shots. I always tell them you need to hire a professional to set up a shoot to take a picture of your product to go on your website. And they're like, no, I can take it in my basement with, you know,
right,
a single light source. And, yeah.
My iPhone's got a camera.
Exactly. And then we'll go through the design process of the website, and they'll be like, okay, well, wow, these pictures look terrible.
Really?
No, really? It looks like, you know what it looks like? It looks like you took a picture of it in your basement with a single light source and your home, you know, digital camera.
Who would have thought?
Oh, that's weird.
That's why they get paid a lot, photographers.
That's right. So it all depends on what you're trying to do.
Right.
If it seems logical that someone would make this infinitely better by doing it professionally, then you should probably do it professionally.
Yeah, I know. Looking at some of the talking head videos that I've seen, I'll scratch my head. It's like, you know, what were these people thinking? Because they'll do it, you know, on their desk. Their desk is cluttered. You know, the background will have books that are in disarray. They, you know, their hair wasn't done. You know, they wasn't dressed appropriately. I'm just like, you know, yeah, you made a video, but this doesn't look very professional.
And sometimes it hurts them because it kind of cheapens their brand.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and that's, I mean, obviously, I mean, you bring up a good point in that it should be as nice as you can make it. Whether you do it yourself or have someone else do it for you, it should be nice. So you should comb your hair and, you know. Shouldn't have Cheeto stains on your undershirt that you're wearing. But again, it's if you do a weekly radio show that you then wanted to stream a video for online.
Right.
Okay, well, there's only so much you can do with that. You know, you're in a radio studio like we are now.
Right, and you're not moving.
You're not moving. You're
anything.
Sitting there.
Right.
There's no sense to go pay someone, some production team. Just do what, you know, Howard Stern used to do and put a video camera in,
right,
the corner.
In the corner.
And just shoot the, okay, and people will watch that.
Right. I get the idea of what's happening here.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's...
That's incredible. Well, Jay, this has really been informative, and it's been super for our listeners. But how can they get in touch with you?
They're more than welcome to visit my website at www.5minuteproductions. That's all spelled out. .com. So that's FIVEPRODUCTIONS.
Wow, without the cheat sheet, impressive.
Yeah, look at that. And then if they, you know. All my information's there, and they can look through
your home phone number.
Yes, my home phone number and my home address.
Perfect.
My daily schedule.
You don't mind if people pop in, right?
No, not at all. Please, just stop by.
As long as they bring pizza, right?
Oh, sure, pizza and soda.
Okay,
always.
That sounds great. Well, this has been super. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, our listeners have really gotten some great nuggets and learnings that they can use in their launch and their journey. Another great show, Lee.
And special thanks to today's sponsor, Patents & More, your trusted guide through the innovation jungle.
And tune in each week at this same time to listen live or go to our blog at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen at your convenience. And believe it or not, Bill Henry will be back next week for another great session of Launch.